Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. On the right, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
And on the left, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
You're listening to the most disruptive show in America. It's time for Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. And in round one today, it's a war of words between President Trump and Germany's Angela Merkel. Trump hit Merkel on Twitter this morning talking about Germany's funding of NATO and the U.S.-German trade imbalance. This is after Merkel said that Europe can't rely on the U.S. anymore. So we're going to ask, is Merkel giving Trump exactly what he wants? Then in round two, we'll talk about the current palace intrigue surrounding the White House, the resignation of their communications director, and the possible return of Corey Lewandowski. Finally, in round three, we'll talk about the real, untold story behind the 2016 election. Interference by the government of Ukraine. You weren't expecting that, were you? A top DNC official openly worked with Ukrainian officials to create the current press obsession with Russia. We will fill you in round three. All that and more coming up today on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. And we're going to remind you once again that you can listen to Fault Lines. You can subscribe to it on iTunes, where we're also going to ask you to leave a review. You can also listen to Fault Lines on Spreaker. You can listen to it live on the Radio Sputnik website. That's sputniknews.com. Just look for the live button up top, and you'll also get the episodes there the next morning. So there are a variety of ways you can listen to us, Garland.
Yes, and though we are not doing it today for a number of reasons, most days you can go to the Sputnik News Agency's Facebook page and you can see us live on Facebook. You can watch the video. You can watch it just like a little TV program. You can see Lee and I in here doing our thing on Facebook Live. Though it's not on today, you can still go on that page and find some of our older episodes. And most days, most 99% of the time, we're going to be there.
That's right. And we'll talk about it more in the third round, Garland, but you're about to do a big appearance on Fox News, aren't you?
Yes, tomorrow, Wednesday the 31st, I'll be on the Fox News Specialist from 5 to 6 p.m. co-hosting with Eric Bolling and a couple of beautiful women because, hey, it's Fox News.
Now, I'm sorry you have to go from me to co-hosting with me to co-hosting with Bolling. I know it's a big step down for you. And I feel badly for you.
Trust me, Ebony K. Williams, you ain't.
That's right, yeah. But the beautiful women part, why can't we get that? Saul's in the engineer. Can you work on getting us some beautiful women, please? Okay, thanks very much. Saul, engineer, he's going to be getting us some beautiful women.
Yeah, I think that'll get us a whole lot more Facebook Live views, I tell you that much right now.
That's right. Look, we got a lot to talk about. We're just coming off Memorial Day weekend. I hope you had a good one.
Wonderful.
I was researching all weekend, and again, we'll talk more about that in round three. But let's start by talking about this stuff that's happened. It kind of started to roll out over the weekend, really. Really, this is fallout from Trump's trip abroad, from Trump's first trip abroad as president, where he ended the trip. He started it with that Saudi sword dance.
That whole glowing orb thing. It still has me freaked out.
That was the low point, in my opinion. Anytime you combine Saudi sword dance and glowing orbs, plus $110 billion arms deal with the Saudis. And by the way, let's just, while we're talking about that, real briefly, a story to watch out for is we've been hearing about Trump's infrastructure bill for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So an interesting story to watch out for. We're not going to talk about it today, but since we're mentioning the Saudis, keep an eye out. Apparently, Gary Cohn, the former Goldman Sachs registered Democrat advisor to Donald Trump, has been putting together a deal so that the infrastructure spending in the United States, some of that money is going to go not to America, that'd be nice, but to Saudi Arabia, which is less nice in my opinion.
Hey, well, just think about it this way. We'll get it back because the Saudis fund terrorism. So through ISIS, indirectly, we'll get some of that money back in the form of bombs and bullets and things like that aimed at Americans. Just try to be positive.
I thought it was depressing. Yeah, thanks, Garland. Thanks for cheering me up on that. But keep an eye out for that story. But this is really, so the trip started weird with swords and orbs. By the way, a fun role-playing game to play. Swords and Orbs. It's a great game to play if you want to roll some D20. By the way, that was the nerdiest reference I'm going to make all week right there.
And if you're looking for orbs, I understand there's been a run on glowing orbs at Amazon.com, and I checked, they're out of stock.
Okay. So the trip ended on what I thought was a highlight, though, which is Donald Trump alienating the G7 leaders. I thought that was awesome. As a Trump supporter, that's what I want to see him do. And apparently it was effective.
Yeah, a couple of things here. You know, I am, you know, an anti-globalist to being a lefty. You know, I oppose that the trade deals that, you know, Angela Merkel and so many European leaders that the EU have so pushed for. And unfortunately, the United States, our leaders have pushed for. So when any U.S. leader says things that are in opposition to globalism, I'm going to say that's a good thing. Now, I do have an issue.
Okay, wait, no, I liked you so far, Garland. Yeah, that was good so far.
And then we run afoul when it comes to the Paris climate deal because, you know, one interesting thing that I haven't seen much reported much, and that is, so the leader of India met with Angela Merkel, and they had a long discussion, and they talked about the Paris Climate Accord, which they're going to work on. But this gentleman, his name is Narendra Modi, Indian Prime Minister, talked about a stronger global role for the EU and how he supported the trade deals, which I find interesting because so many jobs left Western, you know, left the United States and went to India. So I'm thinking to myself, well, that's all the more reason for me to be against global trade deals because the people that are getting all of the jobs are in favor of them.
Well, that's true. Now, the stuff with Merkel, so what's interesting about this, so Merkel came out over the weekend. I think it may have been yesterday, so I'm going to include Memorial Day in the weekend for the purposes of our calculations here. And she said that you can no longer consider that the EU has to fend for themselves, they have to rely on themselves, and that they can no longer rely on the U.S. or the U.K., by the way, post-Brexit U.K.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, duh, you're finally getting it, Andrea. That's what I call her. I call her Andrea. We're close.
You know who else doesn't rely on the EU anymore? The European people don't seem to reply. If you look at what's going on, the EU is put together and the people, the citizens were told they would be better off. They would have more jobs. They would have all these wonderful things and they've gotten none. It's been just another globalist organization that's put together to keep the international corporations outside of the constraints of democracy. And so certainly the EU has not done what it was lived up to, you know, hasn't. And now, and I know it is popular for Angela Merkel in Germany. Let's be honest. Politically, it's a popular thing for her to oppose Trump, as it is here, as it is in so many places. I oppose Trump, but the EU has not worked in the best interest of the individual worker in Europe.
Okay, well, let's put a bookmark in that because we're going to be talking about the EU in the third segment. When we talk about this Ukrainian election interference, you honestly can't understand it. And that's a story that involves Hillary Clinton, George Soros. You can't understand it without understanding how the EU fits into everything. But again, we'll get to that in the third segment. So what I thought was interesting about a couple things here. Number one, Trump hit back on Merkel. And he did it on, as he is wont to do. He did it on Twitter this morning, right? And he brought up the trade imbalance. He brought up two things. We talked about one of them last week. We talked about the fact that Germany has not been putting in their fair share at NATO. This is something that Trump ran on and that was controversial. And by the way, NATO fits into this whole, because NATO and the EU are very, I mean,
it's the same, you know, it's kind of one and the same.
Right. NATO's effectively the EU's military. Effectively, I mean,
That's a good point. I never thought of it, but that's a good point because the EU is this kind of globalist organization that is kind of outside of the constraints of democracy of any individual country, right? No individual
right.
voters.
That's exactly
they
right.
They can't have any. They can't. The voters in a given country can't come out and say, "Well, we don't want the EU to do this because this becomes some blob of power outside of it." And that's basically what NATO is. People in individual countries can't control. You know, there's like a NATO supreme commander who. Whose name, God only knows who that may be. So you're right. They are like mirror images of themselves. They're kind of, you know, I hate to use this word, but for the people who believe in this whole new world order thing.
Right, right.
That's kind of the big fear of them having that you have both a government and a military organization that's outside of the constraints of democracy.
And that's the danger that a lot of people, and like you say, look, you could see it in France with the success of Le Pen, who did not win, obviously, but still got pretty far. You could see it with the success.
And add this to Le Pen. Add this to Le Pen. And keep in mind that even though our boy Macron won, you could say he won, like 70, is it really a victory when like 70% of the people in your country either stay home or vote against you? What kind of a victory is that? What that says, when you have a winner like that, what that says is if somebody comes out to run who people actually do like, that they will destroy the status quo.
Well, and Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, again, also second place, but still did better than expected. What you're seeing in both France and the Netherlands is that the traditional, I mean, the guy in France said it, the former high official in the French Socialist Party, he said the French Socialist Party is dead. And so that's not the death of socialism in France. That's a shakeup of the existing political order. Even Macron, for instance, is from a brand new political party. His political party is like a couple of years old.
The two parties who have run France for the last 60 years, both of them lost in this election.
That's right. The conservatives were too, but I'm just saying the guy who was a former French socialist. So what we're seeing is a massive shakeup. We're seeing a big pushback against the establishment, but it wasn't enough. Because of media, my belief is because of media control. I've said this before. I think the big difference in Brexit was, frankly, Steve Bannon starting Breitbart London. Breitbart London provided an alternate view. You got to remember what Breitbart did under Bannon's leadership, and I was working for him at the time, in this election, when everybody, the establishment Republican machine, including National Review, including Glenn Beck, right? That world was deadly against Trump, okay? The Weekly Standard. Of course, the liberal press was against Trump as well, right? That makes sense. That's not shocking to me. But when the establishment Republican media, like I say, Weekly Standard, National Review, even people like Beck, were dead set against Trump, Breitbart was providing the coverage that was not saying he was Hitler. I mean, Beck was out there literally comparing Trump to Hitler and his supporters to brown shirts.
You know, I've made the point all along that the Trump was the equivalent of Brexit. And I said he was going to win. I predicted that he was going to win based on Brexit. And basically, here's my position to sum it all up. When people feel as though they have been failed by the establishment, sometimes they feel that the only option they have, the only real vote they can have, is a vote to smash the system. I think that's what Brexit was. I don't think it was, you know, Bannon may have had an effect, but I think this is a worldwide phenomenon where people are looking for simply a way to smash the system. And I think what the system doesn't get it. They don't get it.
But well, what Bannon's been talking about. When Bannon said to the media a few months ago, by the way, I love Steve Bannon. I got to point that out. When Bannon said to the media a few months ago, you need to shut up and listen, because that's what he said. He did not just say you need to shut up. The media reported it, you need to shut up. He said you need to shut up and listen. Listen to who? The people. That's what he's talking about. You need to listen to the voice of the people. So here's what's interesting about what Trump said with Merkel, though. He's arguing, he was saying to her, like, we have this big trade imbalance with Germany. And guess what, Garland?
We do have a big trade imbalance.
We do have
Germany.
A big trade imbalance. It's inarguable. Furthermore, the other thing that's interesting about what he was doing with Merkel is that, well, let's talk about one other thing about the EU. You're saying the EU hasn't worked out well for some European people, but who's the EU worked out really well for?
Really?
Well, no, specifically the one country has done
Germany.
Germany, exactly right.
Exactly.
Germany has done very, very, very well.
Ask Greece how they feel about Germany and the EU.
Well,
and how
okay,
it's worked
so
out for them.
Well, let's be specific. Why has Germany done well in the EU? And why would Greece be upset? Because Germany's been the banker.
Exactly.
Germany's been the one loaning the money to countries like Greece.
Yep.
And now saying you have to call in your debt We're calling in your
well,
debt,
you know what
basically.
They do? They go out to the countries are kind of on the edge, the countries that are outside of the traditional European Union, that are kind of on the fringes, on the edge, maybe could go elsewhere and don't have as strong an economy. And they say, come on in and we'll look out for you. They bring them in and then they use complicated financial tools to lend them a lot of money and to put them in debt up to their ears. And then they basically pull a Wall Street. So it sounds to me like Germany, to some extent, is the Wall Street of the EU.
Well, let's look at this country you have, Greece. It's certainly a lovely country, yeah? It would be a shame if anything happened to it, you know? This is what Germany does,
yeah, exactly.
Essentially.
Exactly.
They come in, they're the German mafia. I don't know who's the German mafia, probably the SS. I don't know, really. But that the Germans basically come in and are like, oh. And this is also what the EU's done, by the way, with England. Oh, so you want to leave, do you? Hey, England. Well, it would be a shame if anything happened to your credit rating, you know. I mean, this is what they end up doing. They're trying to punish England. And England is back. Oh, you broke me glasses, right? This is what England's back. England's trying to fight against this, saying basically, look, the people voted for us to leave, and the EU is saying we're going to punish you.
Well, and you know what that's about? That's about sending a message to everyone else. That's about having a chilling effect. What they want to do, what the EU wants to do is send a message to any countries. You know how the mafia does? Anybody who wants, if you think about snitching to the police later, you're going to see that we tortured this guy, cut his hands off and burned him to death, right? And that's what it's about. They want to send a message to everyone else. If you try to do what Europe did, what England did, you're going to get what England got. And they want to beat him up to some extent.
And again, to his credit at this point, Trump ain't playing. This is the Trump who I supported. This is the guy who was willing to say to Germany, hey, no, 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 we're not going to play this way. Now, the media, interestingly, because, you know, the media is quick to use the word treason to talk about Trump. Why is the media siding with Germany?
Well, you know, it's funny.
It's fascinating.
You know
to
what's
me.
Funny about this? This is the Trump that progressives said, well, there's a couple of things that we don't have a problem with Trump, and that is his trade policies and globalism. Well, the only thing. But the other part is, the other side is the part that we really didn't like because we're environmentally friendly and we see him backing out of the climate deal and we're like, oh, good. The good news is that the TPP is dead. The bad news is that we're all going to be dead too because we're going to get fried.
Well, we'll talk about the climate deal some other time, but this is awesome.
Well, we get drowned instead of fried, so maybe we'll
it's quite as bad. This is great, and it's a real pushback against globalism. I know you don't get it yet, but look, I mean, as I'll also mention, Norm Macdonald has pointed out Germany.
I believe Trump is pushing back on globalism when he gets rid of all of those globalists in his cabinet. Not until he does that will I be convinced.
I also point out Norm Macdonald likes to point out that Germany's a country who two times in our history started a war with the world. Twice they started a war with the world. We'll be back talking about war with the world. We'll be back with more on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Don't forget, go to iTunes. You can check out Fault Lines on iTunes. And when you're there, do not forget to leave a review and to subscribe on iTunes. Okay. Michael Dubke. You've probably never heard this name before recently. This guy was the invisible man at the White House. He was the communications director. Well, he has been canned. He has been tossed aside. He is out of here. And we don't know who's going. There are all kinds of names. The big name that keeps floating around is Corey Lewandowski, a guy who was involved in a few controversial incidents, including a physical altercation with a reporter during the Trump campaign and ended up
something
kinda,
I know quite a bit about,
exactly.
Actually. Shell Fields, formerly with Breitbart. I was at the company at the time, and I know quite a bit about that.
Okay, so Corey Lewandowski, some controversial statements. The left, or at least the center, often referred to this guy as a person who had some issues, was fairly apathetic about the truth. Quick on the draw, the rumors that he's going to be back. So let me tell you what I think is going on here, Lee. A lot of people aren't bringing this up. Here's what I think it's directly related to. Very recently, President Trump started putting together a war room that my understanding is, the rumor is that it's going to be headed by Steve Bannon.
Yes.
And that it is about pushback and it's about fighting back on the Russia narrative in the media. That's the big part of it. That they've got lawyers. They're lawyering up to deal with the Mueller investigation. But outside of the lawyering up part, they are communicating up, or whatever you want to call it. They're firing up. They're aggressive. Press people.
They're ready to shut down the enemy, which is the media in this country, as Steve Bannon has defined it. Steve has called them the enemy.
I think that's what this is about. Emma, in your opinion, getting rid of Dubsky, and the other guy, Bossy, I think his name was. Bossy?
Yes, David Bossy. I love David.
The other rumor is that he's coming back. That's a guy who investigated the Clintons for like 4,000 years or something. But at any rate,
David Bossy
is this about David Bossy fighting back?
David Bossy, another guy who I'm very proud to know, David Bossy was president of Citizens United.
And then I can add a boo in, but go on.
No, you should add a yay in. Citizens United.
Boo?
No, Citizens United. Well, let's talk about that for a
Hillary
second.
Clinton would probably add a yay in because...
No, let's talk about Citizens United. Citizens United was about banning free speech. And the reason Citizens United was won in the Supreme Court, and you can look this up, this is not conjecture, you could hear a pin drop. This is according to Dahlia Lithwick, no right-winger, left-wing court reporter. Dahlia Lithwick said you could hear a pin drop when the justices asked the Obama administration, if we go your way in this suit, will it allow the government to ban books? And they admitted, yes, it would. So do you want the government banning books, Garland? Of course you don't. So Citizens United, you have to look at what the issue before the court was. The issue was, can the government shut down speech simply because someone's a corporation, like, by the way, every publishing house, every film studio, every TV studio, every radio station, they're all corporations. Could it shut down political speech? And that's why David brought the case, because David was trying to, he was going to put a film out about Hillary Clinton. And he preemptively sued. So Bossy's a guy. Citizens United was, again, people on the left like to demonize
it. In a nutshell, here's my position. Money ain't speech.
But it clearly is.
But now, it clearly is. You know me, when the Supreme Court makes a decision, it is the law of the land, so it is what it is. I don't agree with it, but I don't have to agree with it. I have to accept it, and I'm willing to do that.
I know, but you can't explain why you – are you in favor of banning books, yes or no?
Oh, is that one of those, like, are you still beating?
No, this is what the
issue. Of course I'm not in favor
then
of banning books.
Then you believe Citizens United was...
No, I don't. But I don't believe
yes,
in
you
it.
Do.
But we've got a bigger fish to fry right now.
Well,
we got to get back to the Trump
administration. Well, here's the thing.
I don't think we're going to resolve Citizens United because it's already been ruled on.
But David Bossy is a free speech hero. If David Bossy were on the left...
Yeah, if you're a billionaire, he's a free speech hero. If you're an average guy, you're pretty much shafted. But let's move forward here.
People who own radio stations and film studios and TV stations, that's right.
Yeah, they just love
but
this
by
guy.
The way,
that's for the rest of us, not so much.
That's not true. I have an LLC. I have a corporation. Did
so
I give up my rights somehow when I started an LLC?
Not as a citizen.
Okay,
but
good.
Look, good. It is what it is. David Bossy's happy. Hillary Clinton and the DNC, they're happy. They're getting all of those millions of Wall Street. And you're happy. That's all that matters. Progressives, we ain't happy. But
right.
We ain't got to be. We
no,
got to accept
I know,
it.
I know.
It's
but
democracy.
But you're avoiding the issue, but that's fine. But David Bossy is an absolute free speech hero, and he's a fighter. And he was a guy who was in the Trump administration and, by the way, close friends, close allies with Steve Bannon. And by the way, this segment is one of the reasons, and again, we're available on iTunes, we're available on Spreaker. You can listen to us on the Sputnik site, but this is one of the reasons if the media had a brain in their head, they'd be listening. If the mainstream media had a brain in their head, they'd be monitoring this show every single day. Because I happen to be someone who has insight into Bossy and Bannon, right? Know the guys well, worked with them. And I'm saying that Bossy and Bannon, if what happens here is Bossy and Bannon come back strong. Bossy's been, you got to remember, Bossy was brought in and he's been in kind of no man's land for the past few months. There was talk that he might go to work for this PAC, this pro-Trump PAC, but he's not committed to being anywhere since then. I saw David a couple months ago, and again, I have a lot of tremendous respect, and I got a paycheck from Citizens United for a film I made called Occupy Unmasked, which you can find out there. It's a great movie directed by Steve Bannon that I'm the co-narrator of. Andrew Breitbart and I are the co-narrators of that film. So these are guys who get messaging. And I'll tell you, Bannon, when I texted Bannon a few months ago, and I said, I've been in the press room. I've been in the White House. I didn't ask Bannon to go in the I don't work for Bannon. So I don't ask him to do stuff. I said, hey, I've been in the White House press briefing room. And he used an expletive to describe the media. So he's a guy who I know firsthand hates the media.
This is, you know what the funny thing, as do most people, that, but look, all the progressives I know, yeah, for different reasons, but they, well, maybe not all that much different, but a lot of people outside of the establishment hate the media today.
And maybe Kushner's learning to hate them as well. Now, I'll tell you something else inside that I happen to know. Corey Lewandowski was in the White House. In fact, he met at the private residence. And what I can tell you, and again, I just want to be clear on this. I did not get this from Bannon, in case anybody in the media is listening. Did not get this from Bannon. Steve doesn't feed me inside info, and I wouldn't ask. I wouldn't put him in that position. But people do. And my understanding is that one of the things Trump said to Lewandowski is that he doesn't trust people in the White House. Now, this corresponds with other external reporting talking about Trump feeling isolated and stuff like that.
And with what we've been hearing for a while, which I expect at some point, you know, we've been hearing off and on, we'll hear Trump's thinking about making a big shakeup, you know, and then it'll die out again and it'll come back. And I think at some point, and I think it has to do partially with, you know, what's going on at the media, but I think also with the leaks, because it's, you know, insane, you know, the amount of leaks that are coming out. And I think at some point we're going to see a shakeup. This may be the beginning of it. I don't know if it's speculation or if the word keeps coming out, but I think that the idea that Donald Trump doesn't trust anyone around him, or that concept, is fairly, you know, if he did, he'd have to be out of his mind at this point. Well, which I'm not saying he isn't out of his mind, because there are those of us who believe that he is, who would argue that he is. But maybe he's not stupid.
Well, here's the other thing that's interesting about it. This communications director that nobody had heard of. Well, you know, what's interesting is, like I say, I monitor the news every morning. I listen to NPR, Fox, and BBC. BBC covers foreign news. Okay, they cover world news. So it's always smart to listen to the BBC in the morning, because you hear stories you don't hear on NPR or Fox. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, you know, I have a zillion examples. If there's a terror attack.
In Al Jazeera, you know, I agree with you.
We
always recommend to people, yeah, to check the various news sources around the world.
So
you're going to get stuff you're not going to get.
Here's what was interesting. The number one story on the BBC this morning was this communications director resigning. I find that interesting, a sort of an internal American politics,
yeah, yeah,
almost inside baseball or inside cricket, as they might say, I don't know if they say that, was the number one story in the BBC. Now, here's what's interesting about that to me. The most interesting thing to me is, do you know when this communication director resigned?
Oh, a couple weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 18th. He turned in his resignation the 18th. But two things. A, he offered to stay on through the president's trip, which I think was good, right? And by the way, if Trump didn't want him on, he would have been gone that day. But he stayed through that. But also, it didn't leak. Wow. Communications director puts in a letter of resignation. So that's a solid thing.
Yeah.
That's not like, well, he's thinking about leaving. Puts in a letter of resignation, and it doesn't leak for over 2 weeks. Huh. That's very, very interesting. So there's something happening. There's something happening within the White House. Now, the other thing that I noticed today on the TV screens, and we've talked about this before, the media's current narrative on this whole thing is the GOP agenda. By the way, stop pretending you care about the GOP's agenda, mainstream media. You don't care about the GOP's agenda, but okay. It's called concern trolling. That's what this is called, by the way. You pretend to care. So here's what the messaging is. The GOP's agenda is being hurt by Donald Trump's, you know, daily problems. I heard this in the White House 2 weeks ago.
Too. To me, here's what that's really about. It is about the establishment who wants to take Trump out, trying to get trying to gain allies in the Republican Party. You know what I mean? So they're saying to the Republican Party, look, guys, we want to take Trump out and you need to join us because, hey, he's hurting your agenda, too. Now, the Bernie people have been arguing, hey, it's hurting the GOP agenda. Yeah, wonderful. That's great for us. We don't like the GOP agenda. But those are the same Bernie people who are also arguing, look, why are we bothering to try to impeach Trump? Because if you impeach Trump, you're going to get Mike Pence and you're going to get the same policy. So it's a waste of time. This is not a Trump thing. So here's what I find interesting about that the fact that the lead story on the BBC was about this internal Trump issue. Because meanwhile, here's something that I would think would be a major story. Chuck Grassley, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and a member of the Republican Party, GOP, he's called for an investigation into potentially fraudulent statements and misrepresentations made by companies promoting the Kushner family. The EB-5 visa plan, remember the whole thing with the
Chinese? That's right.
Right,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So meanwhile,
the Chinese, let's just finish that thought in case people forget it. There was a Chinese, there were these fundraising seminars in China.
Or something. That Jared Kushner's, the Kushner companies, and his sister was
his
there.
Sister.
And she was basically saying to people in China, hey, you know, why don't you invest in us? And guess what you can do? If you invest $500,000, you can get a visa through this EB-5 program and you and your family can come to the U.S. And a lot of people said, boy, that doesn't sound. And she specifically mentioned Jared Kushner and his position in the Trump White House. And a lot of people said, boy, that sounds pretty bad.
Well, and the EB-5 program, for people who aren't familiar with it, it's a program that basically lets you get a parcel of green cards if you invest $500,000 in a government-approved
exactly.
project.
Now,
that's
here's
what
what's interesting
is.
About that. Number one, it's the chairman of the Senate, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, number one. Number two, and that is that this is something that really is a problem, and that if you start looking into Kushner, Kushner and Ivanka sat down and worked out a big deal with the president of China over dinner. So if you look, if you start looking at Kushner and his business dealings into China, you know, there may very well be a problem there. But meanwhile, in the American press, the only thing you hear is Kushner had a, you know, this weird story, and it's not weird. It's a story about Jared Kushner having meetings with the Russian ambassador, with Russian emissaries, whatever the case may be, with a Russian banker. And they go on to, you know, they're trying to turn this into this gigantic thing. Whether it is or not, I don't know. But it certainly appears that at the time, it was during the transitional period after President Trump was elected. And it appears that it's going to be hard to say this wasn't transitional work for a member of a point person on his transition team. But I think that this is a significant and substantive story, particularly because it's coming from the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee and he's a member of the GOP, and it may be substantive, and the U.S. media is not touching that. They're all over the other Kushner-Russian thing.
Well, and so the other thing interesting to note about Grassley is he's a guy who's called for the EB-5 program to be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a big critic of this EB-5 program, as a lot of people are, because there's been a lot of corruption. You got to remember, you can get green cards for investing $500,000 into a government-approved project. So this
is have been convicted of misappropriating funds in regard to that. People have gone to jail for this.
Yeah, because this is really the essence of oligarchy in a sense. Because you don't get the green cards for investing in any U.S. business. It's got to be a government-approved business. Does that make sense? And so you have to go through the government process. And by the way, Trump himself was involved in an EB-5 real estate deal in New Jersey. And we've talked about the issue before, but anybody can look up EB-5. By the way, I just want to mention, because you're talking about senators and we're talking about this whole Russia narrative. Did you see what John McCain said over the weekend?
No, if I see like John McCain's name, I'm probably not going to read that.
John,
I should.
John McCain, this is not misquoting. He said Vladimir Putin is more dangerous than ISIS. Now, here's the thing. If John McCain is trying to have a contest to see who can say the stupidest thing.
He won.
I mean, he won. I mean, here's the thing. You can be critical of Putin. You can not like Putin. But when you say worse than ISIS,
when in fact we're
that's a statement you should be forced to
As we speak, this country is involved in a bilateral agreement with Russia and Turkey and Syria and various other countries and Iran fighting ISIS in Syria. We're actually involved in agreement where we're battling ISIS. Again,
again, the media barely picked up on this.
When you look at the stories, we look at three stories. We look at one about Dubkey being canned or leaving. We look at one about Kushner as a member of the transition team talking to foreign emissaries. And then we look at the other one where Chuck Grassley calls for an investigation. And we see the only one that gets any... The one that's not getting any traction is the one about an actual investigation into Kushner that could be substantive.
Yeah, the China issue is, like you say, that's a real issue. And look, we're going to talk about this in the third segment as well. One of the reasons I say this is the most disruptive radio show in America is because the way the media works in this country is they force feed you over and over and over again, the same narrative. So if they talk about a story day after day after day after day after day, it doesn't make any difference if one counter story came out about it or two counter stories. In fact, that's the way you can sort of determine something. Use the Google yourself. And if you want to see whether a story's been buried or memory-holed, look it up and see how many mainstream media references there are to it. Try this and what we're going to be talking about in the third segment. See how many mainstream media references there are to Grassley bringing up this EB5 situation. You're not going to find many. See how many there are about the Russia story? A zillion. So that's the way the media works. That's the way they get you here.
Yes, we've got one more segment to go. We're going to have a good time on that. We got some interesting stuff to talk about. We're going to really talk about interference in the 2016 election from a perspective that you haven't heard. We'll be right back. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.
We're back with Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Breaking news, I'm Lee Stranahan, and I have no social life. That's another way of saying, Garland, that I spent all weekend doing research. Oh, my God. I spent all weekend doing research. My wife and kids are in the Midwest.
And if you want to benefit from the fruits of that research, make sure you go to iTunes, subscribe, Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Subscribe, make sure you leave a review, and a 5-star rating would be nice, but whatever you feel is proper. Make sure you go to iTunes and sign up.
Nice segue. Well done. So I was researching, I'm working on a timeline for my site, populist.tv, about this whole Russia narrative. And the reason I do that is as a journalist, as a researcher, putting together a timeline. Well, Garland, you're in law enforcement. You know the value of a timeline, I assume.
Well, you know, how I was in law enforcement many years ago, we used to do timelines on the wall with, like, squares of paper and a string.
Yeah, and you know, there's...
And in fact, that's how we contacted each other with... That's the phones. We had tin cans and strings also back then.
You
long
are
time
old,
ago.
Aren't you?
Long time ago.
You are old. You're older than me. And that's tough nowadays. I'm so old, I had a TRS-80, which, again, is the second nerdiest reference I'll make the entire week.
I'm so old, we didn't have history class when I was in high school because nothing had happened yet.
There we go. So I was doing research in this whole Russia narrative, and here's why. Because I actually believe that the American people, the vast majority of people, are just trying to figure out what's going on. And I think the media is doing a poor job of giving them facts. I think there's a lot of conjecture and a lot of jumping to conclusions and a lot of narrative-driven stuff. So let's start to talk about some of the stuff I came up with. And I'm going to point out again, and I like to point this out, nothing I'm going to tell you is conjecture. So let's talk about some stuff that we have to talk about to set this up. Now, part of the reason we have to talk about it is there's some history that most Americans don't know or understand that has to do with the Ukrainian Revolution that overthrew Yanukovych in 2014. Now, what does that have to do with anything? You'll see. But I'm just saying most people don't know much about it. And by the way, I didn't know much about it. And I consider myself pretty informed on news stuff. And I didn't know much about this. So I'm going to mention two groups that we mentioned before. The EU, you've heard of them, the European Union, and NATO. You've heard of them. Essentially, the EU's military.
Military arm, yeah.
Right. And I'm going to mention a name that you probably have not heard before. But again, you'll be able to find this quickly. And it's interesting, you haven't heard her name, and you're going to laugh when I say it. But that's immature, so don't do it. So her name is Alexandria Chalupa. Okay, stop the Taco Bell joke. Stop it. They're too obvious. Drop the Taco Bell jokes. So Alexandria Chalupa, who is she? And why is she important? She is a Democratic National Committee operative. She was in the Clinton administration. She's a governor at the Democratic National Committee. And there's a few reasons you should have heard of her. But she's not a name I'm pulling out of a hat. She's somebody who Michael Isikoff, the well-known reporter who's now at Yahoo, called one of the 16 people who shaped the 2016 election. And you can look that up on Yahoo. 16 people who shaped the 2016 election. Alexandria Chalupa is one of those people. Now, that's interesting, don't you think?
Yes, I think it is, because no one knows the name Alexandria Chalupa.
That's exactly right. It's interesting that she's one of the 16 people. I mean, the other people, like Khazir Khan, he's the Gold Star father who Trump went after the Democratic National Convention. He's on that list. You've heard of him. I could go down other people. You've heard of these people. Alexandria Chalupa, you haven't heard of. So I'm just going to read a little bit of what Michael Isikoff wrote about her. As a Democratic Party consultant, and by the way, the reason I'm reading this to you is I don't want you to think any of this is my opinion. This is Michael Isikoff, who praised her and worked closely with her, as you'll find out in a second. Stay tuned. Because she comes up in WikiLeaks. But I'm going to read what Michael Isikoff wrote about her just before the election in October. As a Democratic Party consultant and proud Ukrainian-American, Alexandria Chalupa was outraged last spring when Donald Trump named Paul Manafort as his campaign manager. Chalupa had been following Manafort's career ever since he popped up in Kiev more than a decade ago as an advisor and campaign consultant to the pro-Russian political party in Ukraine. As she saw it, Manafort was a key figure in advancing Russian President Vladimir Putin's agenda inside her ancestral homeland, and she was determined to expose it. So that sums up in a nutshell who she is, right? She's a Democratic consultant. Now, Isikoff's leaving something important out. And the other story to look at here is a story by Ken Vogel that was published on January 11th in Politico. And again, Ken Vogel, not a right winger. And he talked about who was clearly involved in election interference, and that is the country of the Ukraine. Okay?
In fact, so much so that afterwards it was well known news that they interfered or worked to help the Clinton campaign, so much so that afterward they were trying to make overtures to the Trump administration to try to repair the damage done because they weren't hiding. It was unabashed that they were working to help the Clinton campaign.
And that comes out in the Vogel story. Yeah. The Vogel story, basically, which came out on the same day, by the way, that James Comey, January 11th, forgive me. That James Comey went in front of the Senate and said the CrowdStrike was the only people who'd ever looked at the DNC servers. The DNC never allowed the FBI to look at their servers. Came out coincidentally that same day. So two stories got buried that day because the mainstream media has done nothing to cover this story. Just ask yourself, you're listening to this. Have you heard about Ukrainian interference in the election?
Confirmed, not alleged.
Confirmed.
That's the difference.
Right. Because it was on behalf of Hillary Clinton.
In fact, even in Vogel's story, he mentions alleged Russian hacking. Alleged. Now, he even has to say it's alleged, but it goes on to demonstrate in that story that the Ukrainian interference on behalf of Hillary Clinton was confirmed.
Okay. So here's the thing. Let's talk about the Ukraine for a second, because people just don't know this history. Okay. So there was a revolution that overthrew Yanukovych in 2014, February, I believe, 2014. And Yanukovych was ousted. And prior to that, in 2004, 2005, there was the Orange Revolution. Now, this designation as the Orange Revolution has to do with something called color revolutions. And there have been a number of these around the world. And you can look up color revolutions and you'll see it. There are these different color revolutions that happened around the globe. Now, these revolutions were precipitated, am I using the word right?
Works maybe? Perfect.
Okay. By demonstrations, social media activism, right? Sort of like the Arab Spring. Okay. Now, where did this come from? Where did these color revolutions come from? And the answer is a lot of them were funded by George Soros. Now, who is George Soros? He's the Hungarian billionaire who was one of the top Democratic fundraisers, not just and funders, not just for Hillary Clinton, where he gave $6 million to Hillary Clinton's PAC in 2015, $6 million personally. But he's funded all of these organizations, including Media Matters, including Move On, right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Soros also has funded these color revolutions around the world. Look it up. Don't take my word for it. But by his own admission, including an interview he did with Fareed Zakaria from CNN in 2014, right after Yanukovych fled the Ukraine, he said, I've had organizations in the Ukraine. Now, how much did Soros spend in the Ukraine? Answer, $100 million. $100 million fomenting the overthrow of the Ukrainian government. So much so. Now, by the way, here's something, another thing you don't know about these color revolutions. Russia, you may have heard something that Russia has declared Soros a criminal. And the reason they did that has to do with these color revolutions, which the Russians have said are a form of warfare. And I would say it's hard to argue with. You know, so you talk about interference.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, overthrowing a country that's, you know, where the people have been elected. It's kind of hard to say that it's not.
That's right. So in the Ukraine, for instance, it wasn't just Soros and his $100 million. It was the Hillary Clinton State Department through the embassy, by the way, and through groups like USAID, okay, who were also fomenting the revolution, working closely with Soros-funded NGOs, but also official U.S. government stuff. So if you ask most people in the United States, A, if you were to go up to people on the street and say, what's the Orange Revolution? I don't know.
And again, as you always say.
It's not because people are stupid, by
the
way.
And as you always say, you can go to Google in a very few minutes and find out all the information you need to know about the U.S.'s, the United States backing of the 2014
coup in
Ukraine. You don't have to, you know, if you don't believe us or you think we're making this up, you think Ali's making it up, you can go to Google and look it up. The U.S. was right there and involved in the coup.
And unfortunately, the conservative media has not done a good job of covering this at all. Because you Googled this a little bit this morning, right?
Yeah.
Did you find a lot of stories on Breitbart or WorldNet Daily?
Not much. But it's out there.
It's out there, but it's out there through like objective sources like State Department memos. And you can go to YouTube. Go to YouTube. Try this. Type in Tech Camp Ukraine. And you'll find a video posted by Tech Camp is the way they showed activists how to use technology, including hacking. By the way, this Tech Camp was a, but search for it on YouTube. You'll find it comes from the U.S. Embassy, the official U.S. Embassy. Tech Camp, by the way, is a way they would promote this sort of activism, including in Kiev, Ukraine. And by the way, do you know one of the things they hosted at these tech camps? By the way, this is from the State Department. You'll find it out. This is official, set up by Hillary Clinton under Civil Society 2.0. That was the name of the program. Look that up too. Right? So here's what's interesting. You know what they hosted at these tech camps, Garland? Hackathons. I know. Well, Garland's eyebrows just went up.
It doesn't surprise me.
Hackathons.
It doesn't surprise me at all. It doesn't surprise me also that what we ultimately see here is that we see a mainstream kind of corporate-owned media that has a premise. And the premise is the Russians hacked it. And here's the key to me, the key to this whole Russian hack premise. And again, the Bernie people, they don't report that the left doesn't buy into it at all, because I'm online with people from the left. The left doesn't like it. And the key was the other day, Hillary Clinton did an interview for, I believe, The New Yorker the other day. She did an interview very recently when one of the things she did, again, you know, I've never heard a politician who attacks voters like they, you're supposed to attack other politicians, but she referred to third party voters as crazy third party voters. No respect whatsoever for him. But then she goes on to say that she beat both Bernie and Trump. That she beat them both. That's what she's saying. It's just Bernie and Trump. And she says, I beat them both. And as you've probably heard me say on this radio show, this is my position on, and a lot of progressives believe that this is a big part of the whole Russia premise. And that is, Hillary Clinton didn't lose. She actually won, and it was stolen from her, because if they ever admit that she lost, then they have to look in the mirror at their policy. So they certainly
can't
admit.
Well, that's Trump's theory, too. He tweeted that. He's tweeted that.
I've said it over and over. And they certainly cannot admit that there actually is, has been confirmed interference, as you're bringing out today, with the Ukraine from the Ukraine government, that anyone can go on Google and find it. But you can't go on MSNBC or CNN and find it. You can go on Google and find it.
Now, it's important to note, like I say, that Chalupa, this woman, Alexandria Chalupa, a Democratic operative, head of their ethnic outreach. She's not a minor player at the DNC.
Right.
Furthermore, she worked in the Clinton White House. Let's go over that again. Alexandria Chalupa worked for the Clinton White House. Okay? Now, here's the other thing. Isikoff implies that she saw Manafort was promoted, and then she started going on about it. Okay, well, no, that's not what happened. In Ken Vogel's story, he points out she was raising these concerns in January, before Manafort was even brought on. She was bringing up this anti-Russia narrative. Now, by the way, Soros, here's my point. Soros and Clinton both have a reason to demonize Russia. Does this make sense?
Well, the Clinton people, they're from the, let's not forget, the Clinton people are the old Cold War Democrats, the Scoop Jackson Democrats. That's where they come from. That's how they cut their teeth. That's who those people are.
I wish it were that easy, because they seem to have less of a problem with them when it was the Soviet Union. They have more of a problem with them now, and I think a lot of it has to do with Soros is a guy who's figured out how to make money on every aspect of fomenting revolutions. It's currency manipulation and stuff like that. And he manages through these NGOs and through government funding. Like I say, he gets money from the government. Now, the interesting thing also is that Chalupa, in an email that's on WikiLeaks, and you can find this on WikiLeaks, if you look up, she's listed as Ali Chalupa, A-L-I, for Alexandria. She has a memo that's on WikiLeaks where she talks about how she had been invited by this group called the Open World Leadership Center to speak about Manafort, specifically to speak about Manafort. Now, two things that are interesting about the Open World Leadership Center. Number one, and that she brought Michael Isikoff with her, the reporter who I mentioned, by the way. She mentions that, too. Two things interesting about the Open World Leadership Center. Number one, Soros was there from its inception. It's a Soros organization. But number two, it's an official government-funded organization. It's part of the Library of Congress. And as such, it's supposed to be nonpartisan. In fact, I think it's probably illegal for it to engage in election activity. Does that make sense? Because there's supposed to be a firewall. Yet she admits in this email that WikiLeaks revealed, and this is back in May, she said, well, I was just at the forum and they specifically invited me to talk about Manafort.
Isn't Manafort one of the people who has volunteered to go to testify in front of Congress?
Yeah, he has. But this whole thing about trying to demonize Manafort, which is a way of demonizing Russia, I'm just pointing out that first off,
is a way of saying Hillary didn't lose, which I think is a big part of it.
And where is the congressional investigation into the Open World Leadership Center and why they're promoting partisan politics for the Democrats? This is what's come out. She was invited specifically to talk about Manafort. And it's not me saying that her bringing up Manafort affected the election. It's Michael Isikoff saying it. I just read that to you. Michael Isikoff said she's one of the 16 most influential people in the 2016 election. So why aren't you hearing about chalupa every day.
Well, the fact of the matter is this. Let me throw this out there, and that is the Republicans will never go after the Democrats for doing that because, you know, that is actually standard practice. You know, whoever's in power, the concept of bipartisan, of nonpartisan groups and organizations sounds good, but whoever's in power, they always use these groups for their own. I mean, you know, so the bottom line is the Republicans aren't going to come after the Democrats for that because everybody knows that both sides do that stuff all the time.
Well, they will if I have anything to do with it, because here's the thing.
That's why you ain't going to have nothing to do with it. And neither am I might add.
Let's just bring up, well, I'm going to be in the White House again later this week. I'm going to be in the White House. And trust me, if I get a question in, I'm going to be talking about Ukrainian interference in the election.
Well, I'm not going to be on the White House. You know where I'm going to be tomorrow? On Wednesday, I'm going to be on Fox News from 5 to 6 p.m. on the Fox News specialist, 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So make sure you check it out.
Well played. Be sure to watch Garland tomorrow. And we will be back tomorrow with a guest host. Who will be here, Garland?
It will be Mike Hirsch. From Progressive Democrats of America.
He's your friend, and you almost forgot his name.
Yeah.
Till tomorrow for Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.